You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
We are live. Andrea is with us, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can ask questions off topic. Although this evening, with these special two people in the studio, I hope that we stay on topic. We hope we get lots of phone calls. The phone number this evening, write this down, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we do indeed welcome your calls. You can talk live on the air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Andrea and she will bring it into us. I want to start by introducing my two guests. First, we have Jack Marone, CPA and certified financial planner and financial advisor at the formerly known as Nothell Firm and Marone, and Jack will tell us more about that in just a moment. Jack, first, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Thanks for being here. Jack's been with us before, so he's an encore performance here this evening. Jack, first, tell us a little bit about yourself, and as I said, financial advisor with Nothell Firm and Marone, but you have some news for us in that regard as well.
Thank you, Lori. Yes, I'm a certified financial planner and a CPA, and our firm has recently undergone a name change, so now our firm is known as One Financial Services. The name is representing the single point of contact the client may enjoy by us providing help to them in many different areas of their life.
That sounds great. So One Financial Services, so Jack Marone. What else would you like folks to know about you?
As a financial advisor for the topic tonight, the special needs planning is personal, because it's personal for me. My wife and I, we have three children, and two of them have a condition of previously known as mental retardation. The powers that be suggest that word is no longer politically correct. It's referred to as a developmental or intellectual disability, and maybe later on in the program I'll challenge the intellectual disability I think my sons don't have, and they're pretty sophisticated in some of the things they can do. So you can challenge any word, I guess.
Very good. We also have in the studio with us this evening an attorney. We have with us Anthony Rahuba from Fitzpatrick, Lentz and Buba. And Anthony is also a repeat guest, and we like to harvest the best people to come and talk about these topics. So, Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice, and then a little bit about, you know, why you're here this evening as well.
Well, as Lori said, my name's Anthony Rahuba. I'm one of the attorneys in the estate department at Fitzpatrick, Lentz and Buba. Tonight, you know, I'm going to be discussing one of the areas that we specialize in is planning for families with special needs individuals. When we like to say special needs planning for the whole family, it's not just for the individual. So we've been doing a lot, you know, we've seen this on the increase and been doing a lot more of this type of work as of late. You know, it's not just the traditional, you know, tax planning anymore. This has really become one of the, you know, I guess, I don't want to say popular, but more, you're seeing it more often, right? You know, topics come up.
Well, there's more awareness and probably more family involvement than we might have had years ago, when people may have relied more on, you know, governmental assistance, and now maybe families are being more involved. So
there's a lot more awareness today. That's right.
Yeah. So we're going to start on our topic then. I want to give the phone number first, because we certainly love having our conversation with these guys in the studio this evening, but what makes it you know, much more interesting and applicable for all of us is your questions, because we want to know what you need to know. And the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So planning for the needs of special individuals and their families, how do you do it and how do you afford it? That's what we're going to talk about. I know when we speak of special needs trust, we're talking about special individuals tonight. It can mean any number of situations. So to start, Anthony, can you give us some examples of whom we may be working with that would qualify for planning for the needs of special individuals?
Well, the typical person that we're planning for is it can be a child. Mm-hmm. It can be who's under 18, say, and you're planning for long-term, you know, care of that child. Or it can be someone who is older, and you're, you know, and maybe they have a parent that is taking care of them, but now that parent's becoming elderly, and they don't know what to do now, so they need to plan for the future. What happens when they're gone, when their child that now is an adult, what's going to happen with them when they grow older and they get elderly? So who's going to take care of them? So we plan for children all the way up through, you know, through the elderly, really.
And could it also include even adults or people who aren't just with, you know, something that's happened from birth? It could be someone who's had an accident that has become impaired, et cetera. So it could apply to, you know, anybody, anytime.
Typically it applies to anybody who is classified or is defined as disabled under the, you know, government definition of disabled.
Okay, so we have a number of situations. Jack, I know you have particular experience in this area, as you had mentioned. What group of individuals do you feel in particular needs this planning, and what do you see as the most sensitive areas that you'd like to concentrate on this evening?
Well, as Anthony described, it could be a child that had a disability onset from birth or a condition that occurs later in life. But the conditions that we might be talking about could be autism, which is on the rise in the sense that there's more awareness of it being a diagnosed condition. I've seen a statistic recently that 1 in 88 births have a diagnosis of autism, and there's a spectrum of that. That's the phrase. So if it's not autism, it may be Asperger's. Before that became more common, there was a diagnosis of mental retardation, and that is a medical diagnosis, but unfortunately it was abbreviated and used in a slur way. So to stamp that word out, I can appreciate. So if it's not on that in that arena, it might be people who have been diagnosed with some form of mental illness that also have parents or families that believe that should they inherit or have their own financial means, they don't know how to use them wisely, so they maybe need some protection around their finances if there's a mental illness situation. And then there's disabilities that may require, with no cognitive impairment, still some need for planning, whether that might be a physical disability around blindness or paraplegic, you know, because of an accident or not. So there's a wide range of people that need a different version of planning than the typical planning that might be done without that disability.
And as Anthony had mentioned, that on the rise, there's more planning, and it could be, Jack, as you said, with this autism awareness and 1 in 88 births, and it is, you know, they're seeing higher incidences of it. That could be one of the reasons we're seeing more of it, too. And when you mention mental illness, it could even be people with bipolar, I imagine, where there's a little bit more erratic behavior if it's not controlled by medicine, which could concern parents. So there's also more awareness around that that we didn't used to see. So, Anthony, when we're looking at these families, I imagine they're coming in and talking to you about some of the planning that needs to be done as far as their estate planning, but does the topic of conversation go into the services that they're going to need when you're doing the planning? And I know we'll talk to Jack about the services that are available as well, but are you finding that even in your estate planning and writing documents that people are talking about services that the, that their family members are going to need and how much those services are going to cost and how can they protect their assets in the planning that they're doing?
Yeah, we do. We do touch on that. When we're preparing the documents themselves, we're not typically including that, but when we're looking at the overall picture, we're discussing, okay, what finances are going to be needed to, you know, support this child, say, through lifetime, and how are they going to, you know, put this money aside to take care of them? And that's when we get into, which we'll touch on a little later, about setting up trusts and all of that, so to provide for them, but at the same time not disqualify those individuals from receiving whatever government benefits they're going to receive as well.
Okay, great. As I said, I've been gone for a couple weeks, so I've lost track of how I need to do things, which is I have to take a break. So I want to give the phone number one more time. We strongly encourage folks to call in with any questions they have. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Is your car so environmentally incorrect that it creates its own ecosystem?
Donate it through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
This station gets the proceeds and you get a tax break.
To find out more, call 866-789-8627.
Car Talk airs Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. For more information, visit our website at WDIY.org.
Okay, and we're back. And I have in the studio with me this evening financial advisor Jack Marone, who's a CPA and a certified financial planner with One Financial Services, and Anthony Rahuba, an attorney with Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba. And we are discussing planning for special individuals. Special needs planning as another term used, and we're talking basically about who this might apply to, and then how do we take care of our, not just the individual, but also the families that are involved in taking care of the individual and making sure that they have the resources available, they have the proper estate planning documents, and their finances structured in such a way to not only support the person needing the extra help or services, but also making sure we take care of the family and the other members in the family. So, Jack, when we're talking about services, what kind of services might be available to folks, and how do they find out about them? And what I'm talking about here are the services that they need to make sure that they're getting their loved ones the proper support and care that we as family members might not otherwise be able to give them, you know, on our own. So how do we find out those things?
Well, every case is going to be different, but what a family is attempting to accomplish is that should they not be there on their own, mom and dad, unexpectedly, or because of natural causes, as Anthony was describing, longevity is only so long, the care that was given by mom and dad no longer will be. And that's what you're attempting to design or access. And it is with regularity that a child will get introduced to a typical child will get introduced to a preschool program and eventually get to a school-age program, and they'll eventually graduate. And a typical child moves on to the next phase in their life. But a child with a disability may never heal or grow out of that disability. So at the age of 21, when the school system no longer has a place for them, there needs to be a daytime activity that has some quality of life associated with it. So if a person has access to an opportunity to enjoy a work experience, you're trying to access the services that support that. It might be a job coach. So there could be an application, a petition, an advocacy that my son probably could work. He just would need some help doing so. And there's a avenue to try to make that happen. If that's not the case, there may be just a place that is different from staying home on the couch all day that your child should get to enjoy. So they dress like they used to when it was school age, and they go on a bus like they used to when it was school age, and they go somewhere like they used to, except it's not school anymore. It's more like a daycare setting where there's comfort around them, and there's some stimulating activity throughout the day, and there's excursions into the community, and that's referred to as a day program. And there are paths to try to get that. Now, all of that is happening during the day, but the day isn't permanent because it eventually ends and it's night. Mm-hmm. And at night, you want to come home somewhere. And if there's no longer mom and dad to come home to, there might be something called a group home that you're attempting to get access into so that there's supported living arrangements of caregiving and quality and safety and health issues are addressed, that from about 4 p.m. till the next morning, there's a home environment that adult or child would have the privilege of enjoying. And unfortunately, people are waiting for some of these services as opposed to this event happened and we can plug you right into the next opening. It's not that easy. It takes quite a bit of advocacy and petitioning and, expressing that you need this or want this or it is desperately needed, and eventually it happens. The authorities, the bureaucracy that attempts to do this aren't bad people. They just have limited resources, and they're attempting to dole them out at the pace they become available.
So it's an issue of sometimes group homes or these other services that you mentioned. There's not openings.
Well, there's not openings, and in the absence of planning early in life, there may not be another option besides waiting. What we'll probably talk about tonight is, suppose you're trying to design a plan that isn't dependent on those openings being available. You're trying to fund the quality of life in mom and dad's absence privately by acquiring enough personal wealth, making sure enough personal wealth occurs because of a life insurance policy that you buy, somehow attempting to acquire the finances that pay for the things that mom and dad used to do. The problem is, at the cost that it would be, even tremendous wealth would disappear quickly. Mm-hmm. So you want to retain the privilege, the ability to still access some services.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the conundrum of, if a child inherits outright, now they have money, so they are completely disqualified from any welfare benefit. But if they would inherit it the right way, protected in certain kinds of trusts, then the access to benefit streams still is retained.
So, Anthony, that's where you come in, where you are talking to families about how to still be able to support your child, either, during your lifetime or after, when you can no longer be there to take care of your kids because you've passed on, and you want to make sure there's some funding there to help kind of supplement those government benefits that they may have been entitled to prior. So we come to see you and we talk to you about this kind of planning. But I also, so I want you to address that, but I also want you to address, are there any issues with age? Because when we talk about minors under 18, then what happens when they're over 18? Or is when Jack said they can be in, let's say, the school system until they're 21, are we seeing families having issues with continuing to be involved, in their children's lives, or does the government try to step in and take control? Or,
well, let me first address the issue about the age, and I think what you're hinting at there is the age of 18. And what happens is when a child is under 18, the parents have full control over what that child does as the natural parent and guardian of that child. And they can access records. They can do anything on behalf of that child. Now, when the child reaches 18, now they're considered an adult. No matter what their condition is, they're an adult, and you either want – there's two options now for a parent to gain the ability, the authority to act on behalf of that child. One would be a power of attorney. Now, that's assuming that the child has the capacity to sign a power of attorney. If they do, that's the first choice you want to do. That's the first thing we recommend. If a child can't sign the power of attorney because of capacity, say, then we would need to file for a petition for what's called a guardianship over that child. And that is where the court says this child, this this person at this point, an adult now, is incapacitated to the point where they can't handle their own person and finances. So the court then appoints somebody as the guardian. So that's the kind of the first thing that happens typically when you have a family with a special needs individual. Is, you know, when they hit that age of 18, you know, I think a lot of times people are shocked that, oh wait, I can't handle
things for my
child anymore.
That's what I was just
going to
say. I bet people are completely shocked.
Right. Now, a lot of times you might be dealing with a doctor or somebody who knows the family, and they're probably going to work with you. But if you deal with somebody that doesn't know you, of course they're going to be concerned about the, you know, the legality and saying, okay, this person's 18. Where's your authority?
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that needs to be addressed.
You know what, Anthony? And then I want to finish up the question when we come back from the break. We have to take a quick break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show, folks. If you have questions this evening, please give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Anthony Rahuba from Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba, and Jack Marone, financial advisor, CPA, and certified financial planner with One Financial Services. We are discussing planning for special individuals. And it's a very important topic, and one that if it is affecting you or could affect you, you really need to pay attention, to be aware of all the planning that actually is involved in this. You know, at the end of every show, I say be proactive, not reactive. This is one area that I think in particular you certainly want to be proactive in. We were just discussing before the break that when we're talking about children who may not have capacity that need special services, special medical needs, etc., once those kids turn 18, if they need extra help from their parents and their parents have to, you know, continue to be involved in their lives for whatever reason, it's not carte blanche. Just because you as a parent know your child needs, you know, help and you're going to be there to help them, doesn't mean you're actually going to have the access that you need. So we were talking with attorney Anthony Rahuba about what happens when a child turns 18. And if a child has capacity, a power of attorney is an option. And then that child giving you the power of attorney could give you access to the information if everything's been drafted properly. If the child does not have capacity, then it would mean going to court and seeking guardianship. So that is something you definitely want to be aware of ahead of time so that you can plan and get ready for that. So, Anthony, someone gets guardianship and writing documents. I mean, we were talking about, Jack was saying, if we want to plan for our child, we now have guardianship. And if we don't have the proper documents in place, just like I tell everyone who listens to the show, you have to have a will. If you don't have a will and all your proper estate tax estate planning documents, you need them. Everyone needs them. This is something that really should be addressed at the same time. If someone is getting guardianship of their child and they don't have their estate planning documents in order, this is a flag. And I assume that if you have someone coming to you to talk about guardianship, you're also going to talk to them about the estate planning documents and have they considered the care that their child might need. And as Jack had mentioned, you can do certain things with trust and life insurance. So are you having those kind of conversations with people as well?
Yes, we are. I mean, when somebody comes in and, you know, one of the first things we're discussing is, you know, that they have I'm using this example, a child or a young adult that is a child that has special needs. You know, one of the things we're going to say is, you know, when you pass away, how are you going to leave, you know, money to that child? Say they have three children and maybe one of them is special needs. We'll discuss, you know, you don't really want to leave it outright to that child. You know, you want to take care of that child. You want it to be there for that child to, you know, support the child when you're not there. But you don't want to leave it outright because, as Jack said before, you'll be disqualified, or that child will be disqualified from receiving any type of, you know, assistance from the government, possibly programs that are provided by the government. But by having it done correctly and, say, having it set up in a trust, for that child, where somebody, you know, maybe a sibling could be the trustee even, then that money is protected. It can be used for supplemental things. It's not there to replace what the government provides, but it's there to supplement everything. And that's the proper way it should be done. You know, that's one way it should be done as a proper vehicle for planning that will allow that child to get, you know, still get the government benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jack, have you run into any issues with having access to, you know, doctors or providers, either with your own children or with families that you've met along the way?
Well, the profile normally works like this, that where there's been a, say, an obvious intellectual or developmental disability. So by looking at the child, you can tell there's a lack of capacity. So on the what used to be the mental retardation side of the equation, there's very little occurrences that I've ever heard of where a say a hospital institution won't take the direction of a parent.
Okay.
But on the mental illness side, where there might still be the lack of capacity, but it's not as obvious, now if there's been an incident and the parents show up and want answers, it may be very it's unlikely that the parents are going to get answers fast, because medical information is private. It begins being private at a very young age, and unless you can prove you have access to it, the hospital is going to be reluctant to sharing it. So if it's something that the court would agree and you could get that guardianship document in place, you wouldn't want to hope that you'll have a cooperative situation. You'd want to be able to make sure there's a cooperative situation by showing a document. Give me the answer. I want to know what test you ran on my son. And guardianship documents let that happen.
You know, I think it's a very good point that you've mentioned, that it's a little bit fuzzier when it's mental illness. Because as I had mentioned earlier, I mean, I had some experience with someone who was bipolar and wasn't taking the medication. And, you know, the behavior was quite erratic and could have led to, you know, an arrest and, you know, for some of the behavior that had existed. But when people are on the medication, you wouldn't know the difference. So as a family member, you really need to be aware of how that might impact you and your finances and, you know, your responsibilities for that child in the event that, you know, they go off their medicine or something like that. And before we move on to talking about some of the cost involved in the care, I want to touch base on one other thing, because when we talk about special individuals, it could also mean, you know, an adult who, as they're getting older, ends up being incapacitated because of Alzheimer's or early dementia. And, you know, we have seen cases where people are experiencing, you know, onset of Alzheimer's in their 50s, Anthony. So also, when people are looking at, you know, doing estate planning documents, it becomes more important that they also have those documents in place in case this behavior starts coming up when they hadn't anticipated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because people have to have capacity to write documents. And so that's one of the reasons we encourage people to get documents sooner than later. But in some of the documents that you write in general, even if someone isn't facing some of these things yet, what are some of the protective things they can do to make sure in the event they end up being incapacitated or they end up in an accident and we're just a husband and wife today? How do I make sure that I've made sure that my husband or my wife can step in and take care of all of these things we've talked about?
Well, with a typical, say, married couple, for example, that comes in, you can't really predict that you're going to be incapacitated in the future. But what you want to do is you really want to have a power of attorney. That's probably one of the most important documents that everybody should have. Everybody always comes in and says that, well, I need a will.
Mm-hmm.
But rarely does somebody come in and say, I need a power of attorney, because they're not thinking ahead to say, what happens if I become incapacitated? Who's going to act on my behalf? You know, everybody always just thinks, oh, who am I going to leave my money to? The power of attorney is really just as important as the will in most cases. So that's one of the documents that we strongly recommend in case of future incapacity.
Okay. And I think when we come back from the break, we can also talk about certain trusts that can be set up that would also help in the event of incapacity, too. So we have to take a quick break. Phone number 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Anthony Rahuba from Fitzpatrick Lentz Abuba and financial advisor Jack Marone, CPA and certified financial planner from One Financial Services. We're discussing special needs planning this evening, and we had a call come in off air. Let me read the question because it's a circumstance. So I love this. It's a case study, and I want to thank our caller for calling in. Let me give that phone number again one more time, 610-758-8810. The case study. The caller said, my aunt has a level of mental retardation and is now in a home. Her husband died, and she was not capable of paying bills, so her house was foreclosed on. She receives Social Security and also has money in a 401k. Can the family access that money to take control of her bills and finances? And then legally, was the bank able to foreclose because she had the money, she just was not competent enough to pay the mortgage bill? So let me start with you, Anthony. If this is an aunt, I'm not sure if she had children or not. But the gentleman, let's say there weren't any other children. So this is a nephew. The aunt had some incompetency somehow. And bank forecloses. The family realizes maybe aunt wasn't in such great shape. Here she had money. She wasn't paying her bills. Is there any recourse here that you know of?
Well, again, the question is going to be, does she have a power of attorney? Because the family won't be able to act on her behalf unless they have a power of attorney, which would enable them to access her accounts and you know, discuss the mortgage with the mortgage company, because nobody will speak to anybody except that person if there's not a power of attorney or a guardianship.
Okay. So if there has not been first of all, I guess the family, let's say they don't know if there's a power of attorney, but the aunt has let them in the house, and maybe she has enough capacity. Can they ask her, can we look through your papers, see if there is one, see if she's ever paid an attorney? How does one find out if there's a power of attorney?
Well, I mean, it's a matter of looking around. One, asking the aunt in this case, and if the aunt can't communicate that or doesn't know, then you're just looking around. Maybe you can find out, you know, if there was an attorney, and then you can call the attorney and go that route and just do some. It's really just kind of like investigating and doing some detective work in a way that happens. I mean, it happens a lot where we get people calling and they can't find power of attorney, or can't find a will. We're looking around trying to.
Okay, so pretend they can't find one. They don't know, and now they think, is aunt in such a bad position that we should take guardianship? A family member who's not a spouse, who's not a child, who's not a parent, what right do they have to go in and say to an attorney, hey, we want to get guardianship of our aunt?
Well, they can still petition for guardianship if, you know, they're assuming they are, you know, the closest family member. Of course, the court's going to want to know who are the parents, who are the siblings, are there any children? They're going to want to know that. But assuming this case, if it's a nephew, let's say, if that's a close family member, the court will appoint that person possibly if they deem that person fit.
Okay. And to say that you're fit or not, do you have to demonstrate that you yourself pay your bills and, you know?
Yeah, well, you would be put on the stand and you would, the you know, questions would be asked of you. You'd have to show that, yeah, you're competent enough to take care of this person's finances and this person's personal.
You know, okay. Care. So you want to work with, he's on the air. Oh, I thought he was off here. Are you on the air, Jose?
Okay. So you want to work with.
Jose, you need to turn your radio down.
I thought he was off here. Are you on the air?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Jose, you need to turn your radio down.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hello?
Hi, Jose. Can you hear us? Yes, we can hear you. We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Okay. Jose, sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Sorry, Jose. I don't think it's working. Okay, so Sorry, Jose, you couldn't hear us, so we apologize for that. For some reason, you weren't able to hear us. But basically, we need the power of attorney. If they can't find a power of attorney, then you need to petition the court for guardianship. But you really should seek an attorney to help with that whole process, so that you
absolutely
do it the right way, and you're prepared for what you're up against. Okay, so thanks for the call. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Jack, we were talking a little about estate planning, et cetera. One of the reasons we talk about estate planning and having documents in order, having trust, and having, you know, life insurance set up to take care of the children, I believe part of the estate planning also needs to involve families assessing where they are today. I think one of the things you had said earlier was that a family may have enough wealth themselves to kind of take care of the services that they want to provide their child during their lifetime without accessing governmental benefits, but that their own assets could dwindle much faster than they even realize because the cost can be astronomical for the different kind of care that might be provided or needed. So when we talk about meeting with families and doing financial planning really for them in these situations, what do you talk to families about? What kind of suggestions can you give?
I would say that I first set the stage for understanding the magnitude of what we're trying to solve, the problem that there is, using my own life circumstances as a point of reference that I'm willing to share. So a meeting might ask, during a meeting I might ask, you know, does your child have any significant pharmaceutical, medical conditions that are currently covered by health insurance? And in my case, it would be yes. There'd be, there's a cocktail of four or five different seizure meds. If I had to pay for them outright, it would be about $3,000 a month. Jeez. And a mountain of money would quickly go away if that's just one of the bills. So thankfully, I have health insurance that I buy for myself and my company. But if I wasn't around because I died, there's not a privilege that lets my son continue on what was my plan. So as a backup, the state of Pennsylvania has a Medicaid program that a person with disabilities that doesn't have any more than $2,000 may access that same healthcare system that might get that pharmaceutical paid for just like it is now for very little copay. That sets the stage for understanding just a piece of the financial problem. On top of the meds, would you want your son or daughter to live in the same home that they've lived in with you their whole life? And typically get a yes answer. So what's the cost of the ongoing utilities and accommodations? Is there a car in the driveway? And what's the typical grocery bill? And if you start stacking these up, you're talking about probably somewhere between $50,000 to $100,000 of costs if you're attempting to say, will that happen if you weren't there? You'd need to have support in the house in the terms of caregivers that you might pay privately to become like the house mother. That is potentially a solvable problem because the alternative is they get swooped out of the house they've come to love. They may get access to a group home that has an opening, and the cost of a group home may be $250,000 to $400,000 a year for the staffing of supervisors, the staffing of the direct care staff. They typically still have property taxes because these organizations aren't charities. They may be nonprofit businesses. There's a van in the driveway. There's utility costs. So to have a plan that is dependent on the state continuing to fund at such a large magnitude scares me, and I've tried to opt out and say, can I do this privately? So that creates in a meeting setting the ability to begin talk about how much money might you need if you weren't there to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. And then we're looking at life insurance.
Typically, I would challenge any, I guess, argument that says that we think we have enough. So if you have a certain amount of wealth now and you're trying to mathematically project what it might be and what it might be as inheritance into a trust that your kids could enjoy or make use of, It has to survive several threats along the way. Your own health as you age as an adult is very likely going to incur some type of facility long-term care event. And if you have your own private wealth, that facility is not going to care that you need this set aside because it's for your disabled son. If today it costs $12,000 a month to be in a nursing home, what might it be 40 years from now? And if it's there to be paid for privately, there's an expectation that you do pay for it privately. So that's the first threat. And then along the way, you have to not make some pretty big mistakes, like causing an auto accident where someone sues you and sues you beyond the limits of your auto policy, or you make bad financial decisions and it goes away for ways you can't even imagine. So while it may be projected to be there, I don't like the threats against it because they're too real.
Mm-hmm. And Anthony, when we are working with clients who want to protect their own assets during their lifetime, and also when we look at families, as Jack had mentioned, he has three children. Two of the boys have, you know, governmental services, but he wants to make sure they're taken care of. But he has his third child that he also might want to provide some, you know, benefits to as well. So when you're looking and talking to families, what kind of planning are you talking to them about in making sure they're, you know, taking care of their other children as well?
Well, we always talk about how they want to, and in your example, you say you use three children. I mean, we always talk about how we want to divide up, you know, those assets. And sometimes, you know, families want to a lot more money, say, to the special needs share or special needs trust share for that disabled child. Or sometimes they say, you know what, let's put less in there, give it more to the others, and the others, you know, they can take care of the other child. Because remember, the special needs trust, when you set it up, it is really only for supplemental benefits. It's not to supplant what, you know, it, as Jack said, if you go on to Medicaid and the Medicaid is providing, you know, a home, payments to the home for the child, say, well, the extra money that's in the trust is can't be used then for the home. They're getting that benefit already. This is, would be used for extra money, for extras, and go on a trip to buy a computer, to buy a, you know, an iPad or something. So it's like that. That's what it's usually typically mm-hmm. used for, this special needs type trust.
And when you're working with individuals too who may have retirement accounts, 401ks, we look at beneficiary designations in general anyway for normal estate planning. We have something called primary beneficiaries. We have something called contingent beneficiaries. And I imagine this is an area that families with special needs children have to be very, very diligent about looking at. And can you explain why they have to be careful with that?
Yeah, because they're often overlooked is the problem. I mean, when, you know, everybody says, okay, let's do the trust. Let's maybe set up a will with trust provisions in it. But you forget that your 401k, your life insurance policy, has a beneficiary designation where it passes automatically to whoever you name on there. And a lot of times what I see clients doing is they just, you know, they might have a spouse first, and then they just have three children named outright after, you know, as the contingent beneficiaries. Well, if that special needs child inherits, you know, a proceeds of life insurance, or inherits a 401k or an IRA or something along those lines, that could disqualify them right there. So you want to make sure that whole plan is coordinated, so everything kind of funnels into this trust if that's where you really want it mm-hmm. to go, but you don't really want it going outright to the special needs person.
So you have to be really diligent on those beneficiary designations, the primary, the contingents, and you have to be especially careful if you've not named contingents, because there could be default beneficiaries that could end up in the hands of the children as well. So you have to be very careful. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7, on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Hey, and we are back with Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Anthony Rahuba, attorney with Fitzpatrick Lentz & Buba, and Jack Marone, a CPA and a certified financial planner with One
Financial Services.
Financial Services. Their new name, Note Helfer Marone, is now known as One Financial Services. I want to go back to follow up on a follow-up question we had from our caller earlier, and he had called back to mention that his aunt did not have a power of attorney. Her husband had always taken care of everything, and he died suddenly. Is there any hope for her in getting her house back? And I think if from what we understand from the set of circumstances, she is incompetent. She would have to be ruled incompetent probably by the court when they go in and seek guardianship. Go ahead. Once someone's appointed, would they take that up with the mortgage company?
Yeah, the first thing, the mortgage company is not going to discuss anything with someone who doesn't have that authority, like I said before. So when in this example, or in this live case, I guess, the family member is going to have to one petition and then deal with the mortgage company and try to get it straightened out with the mortgage company.
All right, thanks. All right, if you have questions, we still have time at the end of the show, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You know, I think for the remaining part of the show, I think I would like to just kind of go freeform here with you guys. And if you could kind of maybe, Jack, let's either talk about a case or a story you'd like to share, something where, you know, we can kind of demonstrate the importance of people paying attention to what the services are that are available, because I fear that some people may be, you know, paying out of pocket and not really exploring what might be available to them because maybe they think they have money and they wouldn't qualify for services.
Exactly.
So, you know, let's talk about that a little bit and then just kind of talk about ways to,
It wouldn't be unusual for a young family, you know, young parents and young children with some type of diagnosis to somehow manage on their own. It's a very common occurrence that you're going to maybe access therapists and not realize that maybe Medicaid could have come in and paid that bill, or you're going to get introduced to some preschool programs that have ability to handle the special circumstances of that disability without any of the bureaucratic process becoming part of your life. It needs to become part of your life. There's an application process that unfortunately isn't, you know, all that smooth. You make a phone call and an evaluation occurs and forms get filled out, and you're supposed to be contacted annually by your supports coordinator to make sure that if you have everything covered, that's good. We just would like to keep tabs on that because that could change quickly, and you'd rather have the service agencies and the bureaucracy of it all be more familiar with you than foreign to you, so that should there be a tragedy, that even though you had it covered up till now for your 9-year-old and your 7-year-old, the rallying behind that tragedy event, you'd like it to be have some beginning that isn't starting from scratch at that moment. So by contacting in Lehigh County, you know, Lehigh County Human Services, the process begins, and the process includes completing something called a PUNS form, prioritization and urgency of need. So that process begins the support coordinator guiding you into the different services that your family may either qualify for or need, or reminding you how you may be able to do this in a more informal way. You know, did you think of asking so-and-so? So it's not always, you know, what can I get? So it's not this menu of services that you pick from. There's just an attempt to try to solve the problems of that less than typical family. It has different needs. And that process changes at different milestones throughout a child's life. So from birth to 3, there's a certain set of programs that you can access, and that's different from 3 to 5, and it changes again from 5 through 21. And during school, that's a pretty long span of time where things are going smoothly. What's supposed to occur at about age 14 is the beginning of reminding the parents that school doesn't last forever, and we need to have a plan for your son or daughter for after age 21 if they're choosing to stay in the school system that long. They're not forced to, but they can. So from 14 till the graduation moment, there is a beginning of introducing the adult version of that plan, and the supports coordinators are intended to, along the way, remind you of the specific details and help you access them in the right way. And from 21 till, you know, the end of time, that has life events that cause changes, whether it's we would like to try to have our child live independently instead of at home. Our child's now aging and has, you know, geriatric issues of their own, but you're not going to see an adult with cognitive disabilities normally obtain a resident bed inside of a typical nursing home. There's just very, very stringent rules about institutionalization mm-hmm. that, as best as a family member or advocate might think this is the best choice, you're going to have a lot of pushback about anything that feels like institutional level care because of the horrors that occurred in the 60s and 70s and before that with people with disabilities that were institutionalized and really treated very badly.
Okay.
So someone that can help them navigate through that is, they should continue to fight for that.
So you have to be your own advocate, but you also hope and expect that some of the governmental agencies will be your advocate as well.
Correct.
But so you're relying on them for some prompts, but if you're not getting those, you also need to do that as well. We have a caller on line one, I assume. Paul, can you hear me? Is it Paul or Phil?
Phil.
Sorry, Phil. Phil, can you hear us?
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help you?
Well, my sister-in-law is both disabled and adopted. So my in-laws don't seem to have a good grasp of the process for when she becomes 18 and is no longer eligible for services because she's adopted.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you had maybe some more information on that transition. And then further, you know, we're most likely going to be her caretakers when her parents pass away.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had any information about the transition, you know, multi-generational transition as well.
Okay. Jack, can you answer that quickly?
Well, as I was describing, if mom and dad have access this, you know, through the adoption process, there is a supports coordinator. So you'd want to find out if they're willing to be forthcoming with, you know, here's who we're talking to, here's the players involved now. They're, as Anthony was describing, they're not going to answer your questions if you have them, because you don't have any power in your sister-in-law's life with your in-laws. But you
right.
can introduce wanting to be, and perhaps your in-laws may warm up to that idea if you keep introducing it. So their planning is important in this case. Your planning is important if, you know, you in your own planning might say we'd want to provide for, say, your sister-in-law. Your estate plan needs to deal with potentially the trust or special arrangements that could be needed for her because of her disability. So, you know, don't give up, I guess would be my message. Keep introducing to your in-laws that you think that's important and you'd really like them to participate in something that lets you be more informed of what the plan is.
But also, Phil, I think that just because she's adopted doesn't necessarily mean the ability of the parents to be involved in her care.
No, I mean,
different.
Just because she's adopted. And what's her age?
She's 11.
11, okay. I mean, when you're adopted, you're technically, at that point, you're treated as a child. So whether she's adopted or not, it's still a child of that parent. So, you know,
right.
until 18, they have the ability to handle everything for her.
Right.
So, but still, the planning should be done now. There shouldn't be a waiting period just because she is under 18. Should be done now.
Okay, Phil, and I think as Jack had mentioned, there should be still a coordinator that would be available through the adoption agency.
Yeah, I think I made a presumption there that if this was an adoption of a disabled person, that's wonderful that occurred, but normally
right.
there's some support around that was there at the beginning, and you'd want to know who were the players in that story. Now, they don't really just you know, create that connection and leave, they probably have ongoing how's it going moments where they've asked and someone was involved, and that could be the type of questions that let you reconnect to this case with your in-laws.
Right, okay. And ask them about the transfer, like you were talking about that HUNS form.
Correct.
And I'm guessing they would have to fill that out. Should they fill that out now, even though she's currently covered by state program?
Yes, you should. That lets the process that eventually will be needed, in my estimation, at least have a beginning. And the words are, is this being done just because you're planning? Okay, let's do that. And then or it could be, you know, there's been major changes in our life, so this is a critical or an emergency situation, so we need to fill it out because things have changed. So to even fill it out in a planning sense is time well spent.
Okay, great.
Okay,
Thank you very much.
Phil. Thanks for calling. Anthony, I want to ask you a last question, and then I'm going to have you guys have closing remarks. And I hope I can remember my question. What I wanted to say is when a family member is gone, if let's say I'm the parent and I have a special child and I still want to give them a trust, you know, to provide for those extras, but I'm gone and maybe I don't have any other children. Can we appoint a corporate fiduciary or some kind of agency or someone to act in the stead of us?
There is organizations out there. I mean, typically you're not going to appoint a Wells Fargo or, you know, a big financial institution, but there is organizations. I mean, they'd be glad to handle the money, but they're not usually the, you know, practical one to handle
to
the
make
personal
the decisions, right?
And there's organizations out there such as Plan of PA. There's Achieva, ARC. I'm just naming a few off the top of my head that would be gladly step in and handle that.
Okay, so that's important to know, I think, mm-hmm. as well. So the main thing I want people to take away for sure is there are resources available. You have to be aware of them. You have to be your own advocate. You have to make sure you're doing your planning. Jack, some last comments from you, and then how people can reach you.
No, I think you got it, Lori, on what I was trying to advocate for. If someone would have a question for me they'd like to ask, my direct line is to my office is 610-437-3500. I'd be happy to answer any questions that from tonight's conversation people have as a thought and they want to take it further. I'd be happy to answer anything that in my abilities to share it. That's what I love to do.
Okay, 610-437-3500. And Anthony?
Final remark, I mean, do the planning now. Don't wait, because sometimes when you wait, it's too late.
Yeah, be proactive, not reactive.
And I didn't mean to rhyme either, but it just
happened. And how do people reach you?
My direct line is 610-797-9000, and my extension is 331.
Okay, 610-797-9000.
Extension 331.
331. Anthony Rahuba, attorney with Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba, thank you so much for being here. Jack Marone, CPA, certified financial planner and financial advisor with One
Financial Services.
Folks, I want to thank you so much for listening this evening. I want to thank my callers for calling in. I really appreciate it. This is a good topic, one that needs the attention. And we appreciate our guests for being here. Jeff, I want to thank you for being here. Andrea, thanks for taking the calls. I want to mention next week we have Mark Basak of the Bethlehem Social Security Office to discuss when's the best time to retire and the effect of working on Medicare. So that'll be a great show. Mark's always a very popular guest. We want to have you stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. And remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.